This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.com. FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
Oh man, this is exciting.
Look at us, we're dancing, guys.
I love the
corn. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Oh, you are still dancing. We're still dancing.
We missed you. This is how much we missed you guys. Yeah.
We needed something so happy.
The mash.
These are two really
happy guys. Yeah.
It's almost Halloween. We're almost there.
I know, right?
Yeah, there, guys. Welcome back. This is the Fear the Walking Dead After Show on AfterBuzz TV. We are back in the brand new digs. The first Fear the Walking Dead After Show in the new AfterBuzz TV studios. So this is very exciting.
Yeah.
Are you guys excited?
I'm
excited.
So pumped up to be here.
Okay, if that was a 2, give me a 10.
Woo!
There we go.
Oh my gosh.
There you go. I'm peeking the mic.
Got this.
There we go.
So guys, we have 2 episodes to cover. We have the 4th episode of the season as well as the 5th episode of the season. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, joined today by my lovely panel of feedback on the mic just now that I'm hearing.
Hot mic, guys.
By my lovely panel of co-hosts, we have Kristen.
Hey guys, Kristen Carroll. Nice to see you again.
We have Megan.
Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
Woo. And we have the lovely Ashley.
Yes, thank you guys, and feel free to give us your comments and questions. We're in the chat today. Welcome.
Yeah, so sorry about that last time, guys. We totally spaced on the chat. Mm-hmm. We were so wrapped up in the episode that we just forgot to even respond to
comments.
Yeah,
we had the guest and everything too, so it was just a lot going on.
We had Lincoln. So we're gonna do our damnedest to stick with that and cover everything we possibly can. Really quickly, before we get into the episode, we want to remind everybody to please subscribe on iTunes and give us ratings. We provide free content. We'd love to continue providing free content.
Yes.
And it is difficult to do unless we are encouraged by our fans. So it would be awesome if you guys could help us out with that. Go to iTunes, give us a rating, a review, and you can find us on Twitter. And if you want to tweet at us during the show, tweet at FearABTV, hashtag FearABTV.
I thought it was the other way around, ABTV
Fear. Hashtag ABTV
Fear.
Dead
trivia.
On.
I was going to say, have I been doing it wrong this whole time?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Spot on, Meg. So that is what we're going to do. So we're going to jump right into the first episode, which was last week's episode, episode 4, Not Fade Away is the name of it. We pick up our heroes, Nick, Liza, Griselda, and the episode opens up with the house, right? We have Nick sitting on top of, not Nick, it's Chris,
yeah.
The other son, and he's sitting on top of a car, and he's seeing a light being reflected in the distance, and we think that there's something going on in this house.
Yeah, we talked about like the significance of his video camera and how it's going to play a role. Like earlier on, a lot of people were saying, you know, that was kind of interesting when we saw him during that riot, and then he's filming, and then here he is filming again, and he sees this light in a house across the way. So he goes and, of course, tells Travis, and Travis is like, oh, kids.
It's
today.
Immediately dismissed.
Yeah. Right.
You know, even the possibility that this could be a cry for help or a warning of some kind, immediately dismissed as just, it's not our problem. Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's funny at the way that sort of interplay between the stubborn father and the adolescent son. Mm-hmm. And one thing I do think is funny about that is that you see the two teenage characters. I guess there's three of them, really, but yeah. it definitely seems like it is Chris and it's Ashley. Alicia. And they...
Yeah. I'm in the show? Yay! It's the guy
next week. And it seems like they have these moments where they do something really kind of foolish, I guess. But mm-hmm. And we as an audience kind of feel that way. But then you have to think, you're like... They're kids, and they're supposed to act like kids, and kids do things that are kind of irrational and irresponsible.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But I think it's funny that if I was a 16-year-old watching a 16-year-old character act in some of the ways they act, I would be like, oh, that's so dumb. How do they act so childish? Even though I probably acted the same way when I was 16.
Yeah.
So I think you have the same reaction to that kind of... But it's necessary, because it's like that kind of love-to-hate kind of thing.
I was going to say, really quickly, you kind of see that Chris and Travis, they both have this... They're very similar to each other, being father and son, that I think they fight against it, but we saw it, the difference in it from last week where, you know... Chris is trying to be more the responsible one, like, Dad, we need to go out and get this. And then we see in this episode 5, not to jump too far ahead,
right,
that he's the one being completely irrational with Alicia, just kind of going crazy. So it's interesting to see that dynamic. And Travis tries to keep it together, but then he kind of loses his cool very easily as well.
And to be honest, I was a little disappointed about that dynamic because it seems a little cliche to me.
You know,
it's like, come on, son, I don't have time for this. It's like, well, what else are you doing? Really? You know,
yeah.
Like, you have this entire army here. They're handling things, okay? You're an English lit teacher. Like, relax, you know? Like, you can take a second to really pay attention to what your son is saying, because as he found out at the end of the episode, it actually was a serious situation that if he had just taken the time to listen. And I feel like at this time, this is not a time for you to be just kind of scattering about trying to just do other meaningless things. This is a time to really band your family together, figure out what the heck is going on and how to get everybody out of it. So for me, that was I kind of chalked that up as, so that was a very kind of cliche Hollywood move, you know, for writing's sake. I mean, not to bash it like that, but yeah, I just didn't agree with that whole encounter that they had. I felt like you should have listened to him a little bit more.
To his credit, and granted, I don't want to give too much credit because I agree it shouldn't have been dismissed. That's something to be investigated. But to his credit, both he and Madison are trying to act like everything is normal. Like at the beginning of the episode, he's going on a jog.
Right.
Yeah. Who goes on a jog in the zombie apocalypse? So he's going on and he's listening to Perfect Day, which is a great song, by the way. And then, again, to his credit, he's also the official, unofficial liaison between what's left of their community and the military.
Right.
He's been the guy that the head of the military has been going to, and he's the only one that even has, like, a kind of chance. Like, the guy calls him Mr. Mayor.
Right.
Even though he has absolutely no authority. He's a teacher.
At least he's not called governor.
Give it time. Who knows? He might pick the name for himself. I always thought Mayor was a good title. Yeah.
So we pick up there, and then we open up, and now we've got all, like, the military. We've got military presence in their little, their cul-de-sac, so to speak, right? Their little, like, their little town, I guess it is.
Yeah.
11 families, or there's more people, but there's not a ton of people. And it starts out, and this is that situation we all find ourselves in as viewers of the show, where we obviously know so much more than the characters in the show know about their own situation. I mean, ultimately, everybody we meet that isn't, you know, like, a person trying to survive, essentially, and every single, like, cardboard character of authority, we're just waiting for them to die. I mean, because basically, I mean, you may find that one or two of them ends up in the group, but for the most part, they're just fodder, which is a weird place to be when you're watching a show, because it's almost like you're watching a slasher movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, which two characters are going to survive out of all of you? We have the main people, and then everyone else, you're just scenery to be, you know, as we see in the 5th episode, which we'll get to in a minute. So
I thought it was interesting with the military in there, we saw Ophelia, you know, make a connection with Andrew Adams, Corporal, and how that played out, because we learned at the very beginning from Chris that it's only 9 days later. So that relationship went really fast, or maybe they were together before then. But I thought that was kind of an interest, it was a little cliche as well. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that, like, oh, now it's a different love dynamic. But I also thought it was also interesting to see, like, how that would affect. And as we saw in episode 5, how much it did. But when we first saw them together, it's like, it's actually really nice. They have, like, she has almost a connection then to the army. And hopefully that helps them.
Well, I figured that she was only doing that specifically to get medicine for her mom.
Too. She thought she was using him.
Yeah, totally. I did 100%.
Because the fake laughter she's giving when she meets him, and there's the great exchange in the eyesight between Alicia and Ophelia,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. it's like, like Alicia's looking at her, and I think she's sort of like, yeah, I know I'm capable of doing that too, because I'm a woman.
But,
and he's a man, but you're older, and you should know better, but you're doing it anyway. And she kind of gives her this, like, cock to the head look.
Like, really?
Yeah. But then you have this moment of you're like, what would you do if you were trying to get medicine for your dying mother? Would you, like, would you flirt with the guy to get him? And then that's the feeling I got, was that she was totally doing it for that reason. But you do get a little bit more of a sense that there's a connection, because she does seem to like him.
She doesn't hate him or anything like that. And, yeah, she clearly didn't want any harm to befall him later on. But, but yeah, I think the only reason that she formed that connection in the first place was for leverage.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because you're not going to be going to these people getting rations like, oh, he's cute. Like, you know, it's the zombie apocalypse, but man, let me try and set something up and see where this goes. Yeah, I kind of felt that too. I
mean, the end of the world has been great for my love life.
Exactly, right. No.
I mean, not yet. But as we see later on.
It feels like that in the dating world, doesn't it though?
Well, once the epidemic is later and we see, like, in The Walking Dead, once the realization is, there's not a whole lot of people left. There's literal exchanges where it's like everyone's pairing off and there's not a whole lot of women left. Do you want to, like, do this thing? So it's much more, like, upfront later on. But I think right now we're still under the guise of, you know, there's actually some semblance of order. So we should talk about there's two different things that happen next. Number one is that Travis has to kind of deal with one of his neighbors, and we start to get the sense that the civil unrest will not be tolerated, and anybody mm-hmm. who's causing a problem or seems to be sick is going to be taken away.
Removed.
Right. We meet the doctor, and then at the mm-hmm. same time, Madison decides she's going to listen to what Chris has to say. She's going to look at the video camera, and she's going to go on a little mission of her own. So let's talk really quickly first about what happens here when we realize that people are being whisked away for just having a problem, for maybe having a fever, and, like, what do we think about that? I mean, how that all exchange happened.
Very interesting. I think in this entire episode, with the light that was shining across the, I guess, borders, just with people, you know, kind of being hush-hush about taking people away, to me, it just represented sort of the beginning of, you know, we have the zombie apocalypse, and that's sort of the end of civilization, but just sort of the beginning and the end of just human sympathy and just sort of, you know, that carnal human basic foundation that we kind of go back to when we're put in really, really tough situations, you know, because it didn't have to necessarily go down that way. They could have handled things a lot differently. I'm not a head of a military, so obviously I don't know
right.
what would have been the best strategy going forward, but, you know, it just sort of showed a lot of how people can really be corrupt. Like, the humans in this world, people who are alive, they are the ones that you should fear.
Right.
Often more so than the people who are dead. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of got a beginning glimpse of how that's evolving and how that's going to play out, you know, in the rest of this series.
I agree with you 100%. For me, the carting kind of everybody away in big groups, like, even if they only have, like, a mild fever, that to me is, like, everything I fear about, like, a military rule, like martial law.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea of, like, rounding up people and putting them in a military facility, that rings, like, it sends so many of, like there's been so many historical instances where that happened. World War II, you know, even here in America in the concentration camps.
Yeah.
And, or the Japanese internment camps. And it was, and it's so unsettling mm-hmm. to see that, and for the justification of it's for your own safety.
Right.
It's like, this is this is sending a lot of alarm bells, guys. This is not the best way to handle this.
So I think one thing that I want to bring up really quickly that I was noticing is there's actually a scene that this is very, very relevant in the next episode, in the fifth one, which we'll get to in a couple minutes. But there's kind of a moral bankrupt feeling that I get from the soldiers,
mm-hmm.
but there's also the similar feeling that I get from Travis, because it feels like they're both doing the incorrect thing. They're both approaching the situation with this extremely naive sense. Like, the soldiers, I guess they're not both naive, but the soldiers feel like what they're doing is they're like, they're written as these characters that have no mind for anybody other than like, we're just going to save ourselves and none of you matter because we have guns. Mm-hmm. And whether or not we're supposed to feel that way, or mm-hmm. some people do feel that way about the military, I mean, most people that I know that have joined the military are decent people that just want to help people. Mm-hmm. Whereas Travis is like, I'm going to be this patient, reasonable leader to my friends, and I'm going to try to reason with these people, and I won't, you know, shoot a walker because mm-hmm. I don't know. And both sides, it feels totally incorrect. One of them feels like it's written in this black and white way to make me feel a certain way, which I don't like generally in television because I feel like I'm being manipulated. The soldiers feel that way to me. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of balance there. But then Travis, I'm also just like, you're a fool. How do you not see what's happening around you? Yeah. How have you not evolved faster? It seems like everybody but you has evolved faster.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, shout out to the chat. We have a lot of people in here who are saying how Madison is starting to evolve a little bit more than mm-hmm. Travis in many senses. And so, you know, I mean, she still has... Obviously, she still has her issues that she has to deal with.
And yeah, she's still not willing to get her hands dirty.
In some senses. Yeah. I mean, she's getting over that line more and more. But Travis, I feel like he's still in the phases of this is not real. You know, we can help these people. There's a, you know, we can find a cure. We can fix this. We can go back to the way things were before. And right. he's just having a more difficult time really accepting that this is the new reality, which is interesting.
Well, and to build off of that with Madison, I was reading something earlier online that I thought was really interesting. And they were saying that they thought... that maybe what we're watching is the beginning, like an origin story of a villain, which would be Madison.
Oh,
how do you turn almost like a Breaking Bad kind of a thing
yeah.
where, you know, she's the first one out of that group. She killed somebody she knew and she's able, the fact that she knew that Daniel was doing something wrong in this last episode and let it happen and just walked away from it. And, you know, even the fact that she went out on her own and, I don't even think she brought a weapon in episode four when she went to go walk out to see what was going on. I mean, she was defying people. She's trying to figure things out. If Travis wasn't there, she was going to kill Susu in episode three.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of... I thought that was an interesting take on that. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see, like, what's going to build up to her evolution. And ultimately, obviously, Travis isn't going to be there with her. Unless something drastic happens, I think.
So you mentioned her leaving, and she goes off, and she mm-hmm. hides under a tank, and she sees, and she comes back and then relays the information that she's seen now people that weren't necessarily dead, you know, that looked like they were just human people that never turned with a gun in their hand, like they were just shot down by military. That's not something they ever showed us in The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. That's a totally brand... It's a brand new take on... it's almost like revisionist history of the story we've already seen, mm-hmm. because in the comic books... as well as in the show.
Yeah.
That's not something they ever really allude to, mm-hmm. is that there was military presence that just executed a ton of people that were alive still. It kind of adds a huge wrinkle, I guess, to the story that we've seen so far, right?
But at the same time, it's not at all far-fetched. It completely makes sense given everything that's going on and how the military, we've seen the military handling it. Mm-hmm. So it's not at all surprising, but it's still really unsettling.
Well, because we've seen The Walking Dead, the fact that we know that Atlanta was mm-hmm. kind of blocked off and then nobody's there, but the military was supposed to be in there. Now there's a lot of unanswered questions, and
of course
now we're starting to see, okay, maybe that is what happened, probably is what happened there. So
All right, so after she goes out, she comes back, she's talking to Daniel, and we start to find a little bit more about his history out. So mm-hmm. we were all kind of wondering what was going on with him and how he seemed to know more than everyone what his shady past was.
Yeah.
So we start to find out that where exactly did he grow up, but he was part of
Mexico, right?
Yeah, or was it Mexico, or was it... I feel like we got more clear information than that.
I thought in one of his monologues he just said when they came here from America, from Mexico.
I don't think
it was
in
the
chat.
Mexico? Yeah.
Let us know, because it was a week ago. We apologize. But yeah, I don't think it was Mexico.
So he tells a story, and it is in the fourth episode, not the fifth one, when he's talking to Madison about men coming to his village and taking people away, and then he found them floating in the water.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why I think in episode three he looks out the window and he says it's already too late. He fears military presence. He fears their power completely, and he has no trust.
Yeah. And he's traumatized. He's seen this exact same thing play out. So for him, it's no different. So he's like, I feel like I have a step ahead of this. Like, this is how we have to play. This is a new game. This is how we have to play the game.
Because people carried away in trucks don't come back.
Yes.
But he seemed to be okay with the doctor suggesting she was going to take Griselda.
Because he thought he was going to go with her.
But would that make it any better? I mean, people that get taken away don't come back, he says.
I think at least he could protect her. And as we've seen, he's able to take care of himself.
And yeah, if he's there with her, theoretically, he can protect her. But that's why he's talking to Madison and kind of going off of the theory that Madison is going to become a villain. Why would he talk to Madison and not Travis in terms of, I'm going with my wife. I probably won't come back. I need you to protect my daughter. He says that to Madison, of all people.
Right.
Because we've seen he's an excellent judge of character. And out of this entire family, who does he hone in on as the one who can possibly protect her?
Yeah.
And it's Madison.
Not Travis.
No.
The woman.
Which more and more makes me feel like Travis is either going to be... I think what's going to happen is that Travis is going to be put in a position to die, and whether or not he's saved is going to be what we see. Because I don't think Travis is going to be, inevitably, the way he acts in this show so far. He is either going to have to adapt drastically, very quickly, which I don't necessarily see happening that fast. So I think he's going to be in a position where he's going to die, or somebody's going to have to save him, and he's going to sort of learn his lesson. That will be the big step for him to evolve, because it doesn't feel like the way they're writing his character can survive, and ultimately we know this world's going
to
go.
But they're creating stepping stones for that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we specifically saw in episode 5 a way in which that was the beginning of that process happening. So I feel like it will happen, you know, whether or not it's through that example of him sort of being tested and either him possibly getting killed or, you know, him having to save somebody else and really sort of step up to the plate. But yeah, I think that he has a lot of evolving and a lot of growing to do. And for him to sort of be, you know, the patriarchal character of this show, it feels like Madison in a lot of ways is the one who, you know, a lot of people are going to for support, for help, to just have conversations and just to open up about everything that's going on. They're kind of looking to her as sort of an unofficial leader. So it's really interesting, and I wonder if that dynamic is going to
shift
a little bit and play off of each other, and how he's going to handle that, you know, now that that's happening.
And we saw them both, you know, we saw Madison when she saw the guy who was obviously shot and not a walker at this point, and how she reacted. And even though it stunned her, she didn't sit there. She was able to get home. She didn't cry or anything like that. But we saw Travis when he went up to the roof at the end, and he saw all the gunshots at that house that Chris had talked about, and he just sits there and starts crying.
Yeah.
And it's just, he's not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has Madison cried yet?
She did after she killed Artie? The principal,
okay. But like, apart from that, we haven't seen her cry.
She cried in the house when she got home that night when she realized that everything was just kind of going to hell. I remember that she goes in the next room.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't want to tell Alicia what's going on yet.
That's true.
So I do want to touch on something because we need to get into the next episode.
I did find out Daniel's from El Salvador.
Yeah.
Thank you, chat, again.
So the last thing we haven't talked about in this episode, which is a very important detail, and this actually winds in what you're saying about Madison, because I think it's kind of related.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick is lying to everybody and telling them that he's kicked. And it's another one of these things where it feels as you're watching it. Like, this is painfully obvious. How is nobody noticing that he's just not vomiting? He's just, it's dumb. That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So he kills the guy, the old man who was on methadone, or on the morphine.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, injects himself, and he's still fixing. And when Madison finds him after the man's been escorted away and starts slapping him and hitting him, and he gets all shaken and rattled, the first question I have is, do we think that she knows in that moment that he killed the old man?
Yeah.
We definitely, that's why she's so
upset? That's what I thought, because we saw his reaction, because they were all together when it was announced, like he didn't do well and he was being taken away and all this kind of stuff, and his face with that, and you know, because she says you didn't know or something of that range when she's slapping him. So it definitely referred to the fact that when he was taken away and not doing as well, that he was in there doing something to his medication. I'm not for child smacking, but I was so glad somebody smacked that kid.
No, the second we see him in that man's room and the man is having trouble breathing before, like, it finishes panning down, prior to this, I felt so sorry for Nick because he was, when all of this was starting, he was the only one that knew what was happening, but no one was going to listen to him because he was a druggie. Yeah. And I know he's an addict. I totally get that you get desperate and you will do anything you can to get that fix. But like when I saw that, I was like, I don't feel sorry for you anymore. I cease having empathy for you right now.
I'm not Team Nick at all right now because I don't know. I guess, yes, addict is a part of it, but I almost get a selfish brat kind of sense. Totally. You know, there's a sense of entitlement that he has even now, you know, and I know that a part of that is just his fixation on drugs and what that does to you, but like just him being in the pool and just like all these different scenes of him just sort of just, you know, doing whatever he wants or whatever he feels will serve him at the time. And it's not a whole lot of him checking in on anybody else. Like right. The sister has done really, really well with checking in on him, you know, sort of stepping in when Madison isn't able to or just doesn't want to, you know, and sort of being that one to just make sure that he's okay and that he's doing all right. He doesn't do that for anybody. He doesn't do that for Madison. He doesn't really do that for the sister. So I get a really selfish, you know, self-entitled, just sense from him, and I don't like that. I hope that changes and that he does eventually evolves to be the leader that I think we all hope that he can be.
Or, on the flip side, in relation to Madison's character, is she becoming stronger because she's been slowly but surely watching somebody that she loves die?
Yeah.
And, like, in terms of, like, she's just having to let him go once at a, and she's been sort of letting him go for a while, but I think maybe in this situation, in these stakes, that maybe that's going to be the thing that sends her over the edge is, I've already, you know, let my son go. He didn't even die in front of me. I had to just actually go through the process of just writing him off. Because, and so maybe that's going to be a big, like, turning point for her character. I think that's interesting. So the episode ends. The soldiers come in. They take Nick. They take Griselda. And then Liza gets on the truck and runs away with them because she's convinced that she should be a doctor and she should help.
I think she was actually going so she knew what was going to happen to Nick. I think if it was just Griselda going, I don't think she necessarily would have gone. You know, like if Griselda and Daniel, like how she had planned it, had gotten off, I don't think she would have gone. I think it was the fact that she kind of knew, like, you know, the fact that even Madison told her in the previous episode, like, I need you to kill me. Like, she thought maybe going there and trying to, because as we saw in episode 5, she's trying to find both Griselda and Nick.
Right.
She keeps asking about them.
No, and yeah, we knew from the previous episode when they all got back together that this was one of those things where she was willing to make peace with Madison. She's like, look, I know we don't like each other, but like, we're all in this together sort of thing. We need to support each other. And so, like, seeing Nick get taken away, she's like, okay, this is how I can assist.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I somewhat agree. I think that once she's there, she realizes she needs to sort of check in on Nick. But, I mean, for most of that episode, she was kind of more concerned about Griselda. So that kind of made me feel like she was doing this more so because she just wanted to help. And so we kind of know a little bit about her backstory of wanting to be a nurse and how that didn't really work out for her. So I feel like for her, this is kind of a time of redemption, or her sort of stepping up and, you know,
this is what I was meant to do.
Yeah, this is what I was meant to do. I want to help people. And she did a really great job of that. And of course, you know, the other doctor sort of getting in her ear, talking about they need you, you know, you're needed, you're wanted. I think that was overwhelming for her.
Right.
And that kind of clouded her judgment a bit, because I definitely would not have left.
As a divorcee, to hear you're needed, we could really use you. Yeah, that probably means a lot. But I will say that I totally understand her going for multiple reasons. I will say, though, could you give me, like, 2 seconds to explain to my son?
To say bye?
I volunteer as tribute. Yeah. And then she's just carted away. Like, even Katniss got 2 minutes to say goodbye.
I love you, and just goes.
Yeah, you know, it was very weird, like a weird decision. And I didn't sense why they had, it was such an urgent matter. I mean, obviously with Griselda, yes, but it's like there was more than one truck.
Right.
You could have come, you know, at any time.
This kid has abandonment issues already.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so they get taken away, and now we'll jump into episode 5, titled Cobalt, which we find out in the episode what it means.
Oh, man.
They're both directed by Kari Skogland. She's like a pretty classic television director. She got quite a bit of acclaim in the early 2000s directing kind of some more indie films. Mm-hmm. They had some pretty big people in them, but for the most part, she's just the heralded television director. She does every major show you can think of. She's got episodes of X, Y, and Z all over the place, but she did not direct the finale. So this was sort of like her little project.
Her two-parter.
Yeah. Which you could see because they connect quite a bit.
Yeah, they
definitely had a really good flow to each other. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So this one opens up with kind of a pull the rug moment. We have a character who I don't think we know his name yet.
Well, it was listed on IMDb as Strand.
Okay.
Strand.
And he's sort of negotiating. He seems like he's some sort of negotiator, salesman, smooth talker. Yeah,
probably a con man.
Con man. He seems to kind of have the inside track with the guards a little bit. And he's talking to the upset neighbor of Travis, who the guy who wouldn't be scanned, who got taken away.
Douglas.
And makes, like, it's just, the whole scene's very weird. Yeah, I like the monologue. It's unsettling. It's really seedy.
It's creepy.
It was out of character for the show.
Yeah.
To have somebody like that. I thought it reminded me a little bit of Frank Underwood from House of Cards to an extent. It felt more kind of that feel than Fear of the Walking Dead for me.
Yeah, I feel like Douglas was just crying in the cell, and the guy was like, I gotta get him out of here. Yeah. How can I get him out of here?
It's one of those pieces of writing where you're watching it and you're like, this is interesting, this takes me out of the norm. Mm-hmm. And if you were reading it as a script, I think it would stand out even more. But I actually think if you're reading it as a script, you would be like, this is so interesting and great. And then in the show, you're like, this is cool. It doesn't necessarily fit, but I'm on board. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah. How cool was his voice, though?
I know, right? Yeah. He reminded me of the, the Allstate guy. He was like the really, really cool. And he kind of had that swagger about him, too. Like, I was expecting his monologue to end with, are you in good hands?
That is his favorite, one of the classic exactly. voices.
He could say that to Nick.
Who are you? Yeah. And then, exactly, are you in good hands?
But yeah, it was like you said, Kristen, it was a very weird scene to have, especially at the top of an episode. Yeah. And then from us coming from Nick and Griselda being taken away, and then I thought that he possibly worked for the military, and I was like, well, what's the military doing with this, you know, smooth talker guy? Is he an evaluator? Like, what's going on? And then, you know, it makes more sense now that we have more of a backstory now with it. But yeah, it was a little interesting to watch at the beginning. We were all like, who is this?
Well, because I guess he figured he couldn't get anything from Douglas.
Right.
Yeah. And so he's
testing people.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's like, I can't get anything out of this guy. You know, he's no good to me.
Yeah. He puts like sort of valuations on the people, right? Because he's talking about his wife's body, and he's talking, it seems something about Nick is sticking out to him as being worth something.
Yeah.
So let's actually cover his whole character and the scenes with him, because I feel like, there's no reason to jump away and then back to it.
Yeah.
Nothing about their situation changes based on the rest of it. So when we come back to them, now he's met Nick and he's talking to Nick, and we see an exchange when the soldiers try to take Nick out of the cell because his temperature's higher, which we know is because he is going through withdrawals. So he gives him, like, the guy's got a watch, and Strand makes a comment about, you know, our transaction went well. Mm-hmm. So he's clearly given him his watch. And then I think he gives him a cufflink.
Yeah. Two cufflinks,
And he insists on two. Did you guys have a problem at all with the idea that a soldier would say, okay, if he has a higher temperature, we're taking him out of here because we think he's getting sick and turning. But if you give me this jewelry in this irrational moment where, like, it doesn't seem like belongings and jewelry, it seems to matter at all, I'll just let a sick person stay in your cell with you and risk the idea of everyone here dying.
I would had cobalt not been a thing, because even though we don't find out what cobalt is until the end of the episode, all of the soldiers know what the code name means and can probably see the writing on the wall that it's going to happen soon.
Yeah. Right.
So who cares?
Right. Well, even without cobalt, just the fact that the whole world is going into an apocalypse, I think he probably figures we're in the military anyways. Like, we're going to be saved probably more than these people, and might as well have some nice things. I think just some people get, and it's also an ego.
Yeah, it's a power trip thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, and they mentioned that morale is a little, and we forget that these, you know, we get a little bit of in the battle scene that we get, but these are the soldiers that are constantly fighting the walkers that are out and about right now, and they don't know how to combat them because they keep having substantial losses. Mm-hmm. And so they're not sleeping. They're losing way more men than they should be in this fight. And they're morally, you know, more like, how do you explain to yourself that you are fighting the living dead?
Right.
Like, yeah. What does that do? And they were also explaining that a lot of them are young and just want to go home.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you rationalize that to yourself? And if the way you rationalize it is it's the end of the world, your moral compass tends to shift a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It just goes back to, you know, how people are starting to be morally corrupted in this show, because to me, it's like, there's still no excuse. It's like, you know, all these people here, essentially, you're going to die one way or another. So it brought to mind for me, it's like, why is this guy Strand even here? You know, like, how are they deciding outside of if you have a fever, if you seem ill? Because a lot of them didn't seem to be ill at all. So mm-hmm. It's like, how are we deciding who is going to be put in here, who's going to be put down, essentially? And then, you know, okay, yeah, I'm willing to risk everybody in this entire camp to, you know, be turned and to get killed. For cufflinks, you know, which you're in army outfits. Like, how attractive is an army outfit with cufflinks? I don't know.
You need a fancy suit.
Right, exactly. So, to me, it's just...
That when he dies, we know who he is because he has cufflinks.
That's that was the status. He'll get a real nice burial for those cufflinks, for sure. But yeah, it just seemed really weird to me that they knew all of this information, but that still, it wasn't enough for them to take a step back and think, okay, wait, these are people, you know, these are human beings. Mm. Like, let's go about this in a different way. Let's actually try as best as we can to sort of help people. But no, cufflinks are more important than helping people.
So do we think a couple things? One, I do think we should talk about Travis and the little mission he goes on, because that's a pretty cool part of the episode. Mm-hmm. But the question I have is, we talk about, if they all know about Cobalt, if we assume all the soldiers know about Cobalt, is the movement of the people and the doctors and the saving, the surgeries and all that they're doing, is that like a product of a former infrastructure that they thought was going to be in place that they're just continuing on with until they just don't?
I think so. Okay. I think Cobalt is the last resort because it's a retreat.
Yeah.
And the way it was talked about was the humane extermination of all the civilians there. So I imagine that nobody would resort to that unless it was the absolute last resort. So until then, go about everything as normal.
Well, if you noticed too, most of the people that Liza was being asked to work on were military people that were hurt.
Right.
So anytime she tried to find Griselda or somebody else, you know, she wasn't being allowed to. It was kind of like, no, we have people for you. And most of the ones that she had were military people.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's also just trying to get as many, save as many of their guys to help Cobalt happen more, you know, more easily.
All right. So we have just about 10 minutes or a little less left. And we have a couple things, unfortunately, we have to try to cover quickly. So I think what we should do is take the last sort of three bits of the show that we saw in this episode. We should just kind of quickly sound off on each one of them so we can try to make sure we cover as much as we can for everybody. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start with Travis strikes a deal after sort of threatening a mutiny with Moyers, right?
And
he gets
that
in the
guy.
Car with him. Yeah.
He's
and
gone.
Travis struggles to kill a walker at long distance with a mounted monopod or whatever he said. mics that we use. And then they go in to save some soldiers. Moyers is gone. They get assaulted. And the soldiers take off and leave Travis.
Mm-hmm.
That whole exchange.
Yeah.
Quick, what's your elevator pitch on that? What do you think?
I think, well, I'll just do the one point we talked about when we were watching. For him to not shoot the walker, or at least pretend to shoot, but actually miss, be like, hey guys, I actually was a bad shot. I think it would have helped to at least kind of build his character a little bit more. Instead, he does come off like he's not going to survive. It's just not going to happen that way. And I got to wonder, too, if Lieutenant Moyers is gone for good, because they said, let's just leave him.
Right.
And we haven't seen a dead body, so I don't know if I believe that actually happened or not.
I did, like, he's they not
just,
coming.
They just left him, I think.
Because they were, I'll wait my turn. What do you think?
I would not surprise me at all if he's dead, but I really appreciated this whole bit, because you do actually see it from somebody who is becoming morally corrupt. You actually do see it from his point of view, like, oh, you know, from Travis's point of view, he's like, I'm a conscientious objector. I can't shoot somebody who used to be a person. And they're like, oh, so you're totally okay with benefiting from, you know, us getting our hands dirty, but you can't actually pull the trigger yourself. So I get that. But this guy's swagger, oh man, like, he drives me crazy. Because on the one hand, he's kind of like, he's kind of charismatic and he's kind of funny and you can tell he's using humor as like a way to cope.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, man, this should not be the guy with all the guns. So, on the one hand, yes, he probably got his comeuppance. On the other hand, now that he's gone, it seems like a lot of the soldiers are like, peace, I'm out. I'm going to San Diego to go be with my family.
Yeah. Or the pieces of them that are still
whatever's left of them.
At least try.
Regina Gash?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to keep it really short and sweet, what we've kind of been echoing throughout this show is just that this was a really clever way for them to sort of put Travis at, like, give take away his choice of having to deal with this and to really put him in the fire of, okay, you're going to be faced with this in some point of this show. You're going to have to make the decision to kill this person, even though you think that they're still human, even though you think it's murder. You're going to have to do it. So either you're going to step up and be a man, or you're not. You're going to cop out and people are going to die. So it was just a great introduction to that, and I'm sure we'll see more of that.
My two thoughts on this were, this was the scene I was talking about earlier where I really felt Travis's approach was so naive and was so short-sighted, but they felt like these very cardboard, morally bankrupt characters in a lot of ways, and I didn't really think that either the writing of their characters was fair, necessarily, and I felt like the writing of his character, he was sort of underwritten in that scene as being dumber as a character than I actually think he is. Mm-hmm, I didn't really like either of those things about it, but it was interesting hearing him with the radio. The second thing, one thing I've noticed about this show, if you guys ever watch like a war movie, like say like Lone Survivor, or like I just saw Everest last night, there's this sense in these movies and these things where you get out of an incredibly traumatic situation that's life or death. You escape with your life and you immediately double back to try to save the people that you left behind in the situation you barely escaped with your life in, which never makes any sense to me. It's like, we got to the bottom of the mountain, we're going back up top to try to get him even though we've been shot 6 times.
Yeah.
Like, he's dead. Get out. You're gonna die. In this show, they don't do that very often. Sometimes they do, but often, like, these soldiers are like, he's gone. We're leaving. Like, the place is full of zombies. If we go back in, we're just going to die. We're leaving. Mm-hmm. And there's a reality to that that I think is the sort of tipping point that a lot of the characters in this show have to experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting to pay attention for. So now let's talk about Liza in the hospital.
Yes.
Let's...
Oh, shout out in the chat, Trini B. Woy 27. She wanted to know what we thought of Dr. Exner with Liza, which was the doctor who just was kind of recruiting her.
Sedina Halt.
Perfect. Yeah, I think we're going to try to jump straight into that.
So yeah, what are you guys' thoughts about
just the whole sequence, right? Because Griselda takes the cattle. What's the device called? It's a pressure cattle.
Yeah, it's like a little pressure gun thing used to put down cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And we see, like, the process of the people that they're sort of trying to save, but then as soon as there's a bite or anything, they just, like, whisk them away and get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we also... Exner, you can't really tell if you trust her or not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like Liza necessarily does trust her.
I don't blame her either. Yeah. I mean, how they handled them taking everybody away, and I'm not sure if that was the doctor's fault or not specifically because the military is involved with bringing people over, and it seems like that with the writing, how they're doing that was more their fault, but I don't blame her for not really trusting her at all, wanting to try to find her people. That scene with Griselda, that was kind of haunting.
Extremely.
It's because we also learn, I know we're going to cover this in a quick second, but with Daniel's past where he's talking about, I never told Ophelia which side of the good or evil that I was on, and we find out that even so afterwards is that whole thing with Griselda where she is seemingly speaking to the devil, and I'm seeing your face, and you know what I did, and that's the kind of person I am, so if I have to die this way, then I loved my husband and I knew that was going on, and that was, I'm getting chills like thinking about it.
No, that's like so, exorcist type talk. It's super creepy. Mm-hmm.
Good scene. Any thoughts on that?
I think the doctor is just somebody in survival mode.
Yeah.
I think that she has just as much to fear from the military that she's trying to help, and from what, you know, this thing that's happening in the world. So she's just in survival mode. It's all about the numbers of how many people can I save. And also, you know, it seems like her assistants who ask too many questions just sort of
get carted away. Yeah. So, you know, she's just trying to do, in my opinion, she's probably just trying to do the best she can. I agree with you. That scene with Griselda where she passed away and then had to be put down, it was very haunting. It was very chilling.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed a little bit poetic almost. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out if she was quoting something, you know, if those were her words or if she was actually like sort of reading, you know, a poem or something. It was really eerie, really creepy. And I thought that she was like almost dead saying those words, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a great scene though, because, you know, we didn't really get to know Griselda a whole lot. And so a lot of people were saying that her death wasn't too much of a shocker for anybody because mm-hmm. we didn't have that much of a connection with her. But I think it just sort of shows, you know, for us, a little bit of backstory about with Daniel and Ophelia and their whole story and how that may possibly play into it. As far as Dr. Exner goes, I think that there's a lot more that she knows that she's not telling. And I don't understand for what reason, because it seems like she also has a really great connection with Liza. So I feel like she could open up a little bit more. I mean, maybe she's just, again, fearful about how that information will sort of play out. But I mean, overall, it was really interesting with Liza killing Griselda. It paralleled for me a lot with Madison having to kill the professor. I mean, mm-hmm. not the professor, oh my gosh, which show am I on?
Principal.
The principal. So yeah, it was a great, I guess, distinction. But, you know, even though these are women who seem to be very far apart from each other, they're actually a lot closer than they think.
Absolutely. I think you guys covered it pretty well. I mean, I was just going to say the one thing is it does seem like there's a transition that a lot of these characters are facing where they watch someone that they have learned to care about or already do care about die, and that's a transition moment. So maybe in her case, that's going to be very important. Mm-hmm. There's two last bits I want to cover. The first one is the more important one. So if we don't get to Chris and Alicia breaking plates things. And having like a weird like
sexual moment,
because that will come back up,
awkward tension,
and I'm sure that will be revisited later in a more relevant way.
Yeah.
But it did feel just for a second like we had like the OC or some show like Gossip Girl just like jumping into this show
for a
which honestly I'm kind of a sucker for those shows, so a little like,
you wanted to see the more of that scene.
But
like now kiss
predictions, the more important scene is the torturing of Ophelia's soldier boyfriend and the information that we find out about both Daniel's past as well as what Cobalt is. So we are like just running out of time, so again we'll try to give our thoughts on this. And guys, I'm so sorry we're running short on time. It's just two episodes in one. We're trying to get through everything, so let's go out of order this time so we don't just go down the line. Why don't we start with you?
It was very reminiscent of a movie called Pan's Labyrinth. Only the guy who is about to commit torture was not at all enjoying it. And I think there's a lot of humanity there. And, but like, that's what makes it all the more unsettling.
Yeah.
It would be one thing if Daniel was just this mustache twirly villain, like the governor, who was just totally content with doing whatever he needed to do. But the fact that he suffers, you know, while doing this, that, you know, he still has a lot of humanity and he still cares so much about his family. It's still like, it wasn't what, like, I thought he was in the wrong for doing this, but at the same time, they found out important information. They found out essentially that if he hadn't done that, they were all going to be dead in the morning.
Yeah, I think I'll jump on that. And what I thought about that was, I love the line where he said, "I told her stories when she was a child, and I just never told her which man I was," which is interesting. That's sort of his nod to, like, this is what's necessary for survival. And we're going to do what we have to do. And sometimes you have to be the good guy, and sometimes you have to be the bad guy. But ultimately, he's not family.
Yeah.
He's collateral damage. So we need to survive. And I liked that they had Travis come in and immediately do the moral, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
But then he immediately backed off, and he's like, "Oh, we're all going to die. Okay, you were right."
Because they were planning on murdering us tomorrow.
Right. Well, yeah, and like you said at the beginning, I felt bad because I actually did think, maybe I'm naive, but I thought Adams was kind of telling the truth, because obviously he did have feelings for Ophelia, you know, and he was like, "I don't know what Cobalt is." And I'm like, maybe he doesn't. And then, of course, at the end, we find out that he does after torture, which kind of sucks.
Time to save Ophelia. He stood up to his SO in order to walk her home because he cares about her. But yeah, you're absolutely a lot of good that did. He was still content to leave her.
Yeah. I personally kind of took it as Daniel taking it a little bit to the extreme, only because he had been traumatized from what happened to him when he was in El Salvador. And I personally felt like, you know, I mean, he said that he was going to tell the information anyways. And I felt like no matter what he said, you know, Daniel still made it up in his mind. Like, no, this is how things are going to go down because I've just decided that this is how things are going to go down. Even if he had just given up all the information about Cobalt right off the bat, we still would be here at the very end of this scene. So I think it's just very telling for Daniel, like what he's willing to do regardless of what who says what and what information comes out or what happens. And then, you know, like you're saying, the juxtaposition of that with Travis and a little bit of Madison, you know, being more hesitant about it and trying to think things through. And this is not a think things through society anymore.
And it also says a lot about Ophelia too, because she didn't know which man her father was.
Yeah.
And had she known, she probably would have never brought this poor guy to
him. Right, because she did care about him somewhat. So the last two things we see, and I think we're just going to mention them and then we'll have to get to them in predictions. One, I think Chris and Alicia will get to next week because I have a feeling we're going to see more of that.
I hope not. Was that the only one that was like, this is weird?
I was okay. The other thing is that Daniel finds out that there's a stadium full of walkers that is nearby. I'm not exactly sure how nearby it is, but it seems like he's going to try to open that in a way to like free them or do something like that. So let's get into our AfterBuzz TV predictions and we can talk about what we think.
You did the mash.
The monster mash.
It was a great
old
smash.
I'm gonna go first.
Yes, do it.
I'm gonna reference the Chris and Alicia scene that I did not think was a problem.
And what you've been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen.
It's like
all
that
night.
Brady Bunch movie where like Marsha or where they hook up and Greg and you're just like, ew, your steps.
It was lighthearted and I love Alicia Debnam Carey from her role in 100. She's actually a very talented actress to be able to play both. Mm-hmm. But I think that what's going to happen is we're going to get a little bit of a like teenage relationship between these two guys, and I think it's actually going to make us like both of them as characters a lot more, because it seems like they're going to have someone to talk to who's not just constantly going to be condescending and dismissive, so we'll actually get to hear what their thoughts are and be less annoyed by them.
Yeah. That's the one thing I did think is because they both kind of are dismissed and a little bit ignored on both sides, so they kind of have a connection and understand each other a little bit in that way. I'm hoping that Daniel doesn't open that door. That could be very, very catastrophic for the entire show. But I feel like for sure, I mean, the Cobalt mission, that's going to go underway. And I think that Liza is definitely going to try to help Nick. Whether or not she lives is a whole nother story. But I think that the Cobalt thing is going to go off and that Liza is going to try and get Nick out of there. And hopefully Daniel doesn't open that door. Don't open that door.
I don't think Daniel's going to open that door. I think he went just to kind of see what it was because the soldier had told him that they locked everyone in, you know, infected and everything. And that's what's left
of
everybody
who's in there.
I hope the
door doesn't get opened by
anybody. I think he's smarter than that. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. But I will say that the next step is going to be trying to get the family back together and then get the hell out of there before 9 a.m. That is our next episode.
Well, and I think we'll see them try to go to, you know, now that they know, because Adams told them where they're being held at, that they're going to go over there as well. And I don't think they'll all get back together. I think it might have even different pairings of who's with who.
Yeah.
And I think I feel like we almost have to see Madison and Liza like have it out
because she had her line about it was her.
It was her. Yeah.
I think those are pretty solid, and we will be here next week to go over that stuff with you guys. So thank you for coming back and watching us.
And thank you, chat. Shout out to the chat too. You guys were great.
Guys, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. Both are KristenCarroll13.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin, that's TheMenguin. Also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and be sure to tune in to the Movie Chick news show on Tuesday.
Hey guys, find me on Twitter, Instagram, Ashley_Chapman. Also check me out on Sundays at 7 for the Narcos After Show.
Guys, my name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Remember to come back next week for the finale. And following that, Walking Dead returns at the same time, same place, here at AfterBuzz TV. So,
October 11th.
Get pumped. We'll see you guys next week.
Woo!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz see you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.